Gene Ritchie passed away at the age of 92 this past June, and this past month, a new book, Gene Ritchie's Kentucky Mother Goose, was published, co-written by Gene Ritchie and Susan Brumfeld. The book includes a CD with 50 different recordings from Gene Ritchie, dating from 1947 all the way to just a few years ago. Before I talk to Susan Brumfeld, let me play two versions of the same song from the CD from the book. Here is Gene Ritchie.
Round and around you, Susan girl, round and around you, Susan girl, round and around you, Susan girl, all the way round, Susan girl. Rights and lefts you, Susan girl, rights and lefts you, Susan girl, rights and lefts you, Susan girl, all the way round, Susan girl. Do-si-do now, Susan girl, do-si-do now, Susan girl, do-si-do now, Susan girl, all the way round, Susan girl.
Golden Ring Around the Susan Girl. That's a recording from a new book that was just published called Kentucky Mother Goose, featuring the music of Gene Ritchie. And the book is by Gene Ritchie with Susan Brumfeld. And Susan is on the phone with me. Congratulations on your new book. This was a long time in making.
It certainly was. We started working on the book together about 10 years ago. And things happened with Gene and her health, and we sort of tabled the project. We didn't know that we'd be able to finish, but she had a somewhat remarkable recovery after a serious stroke and moved to Kentucky to be near family. And when I went to visit her, we decided that she was interested and able to continue to put the book together. So it's something that we did in the last 2 years, really, in high gear. And we were able to finish the book before she passed away in June. It was a real honor and a blessing to be able to do that.
Gene Ritchie was a legend in folk circles, important in the folk revival in this country, living in Greenwich Village in the 60s. How did you first become exposed to Gene Ritchie?
I was first a fan, like so many other people. I am a music education professor at a university. I'm trained in the Kodály approach. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
But it's a sort of a Hungarian approach to music education that was sort of put forth from the 1920s on and really hit its stride in the 1950s in Hungary, which was the use of authentic folk and traditional music in teaching children. And so when the approach made its way to the United States, part of the teacher education for that kind of teaching involved sort of an intro to ethnomusicology. And that's when the bug first bit. That's, I think, when I probably first really heard recordings of Gene. Then years later, I was working on a dissertation, and my topic wound up being Gene's fieldwork in England, Scotland, and Ireland. I wrote about her Scotland portion of her trip, and wrote to her, and she, to my amazement, wrote back and invited me to come to her home, provided me with the field recordings that she'd made that had never been released, and that was, I suppose, the start of our friendship. Eventually, she came to Texas, here at Texas Tech University, where I teach, did a concert with me and my students, and just sort of a long time friendship developed out of that one little question about dissertation writing.
Did you expect to meet her after you wrote your dissertation?
No, actually, it was before my dissertation was written. We joked about it afterwards. She said, you know, I had written to her to inquire about the field recordings from Scotland. As you may know, a recording was released, Field Trip, included recordings that Jean made during those 1950s travels. And then there were separate albums made called Field Trip England and Field Trip Ireland, but no Field Trip Scotland. And I wrote to her and inquired about the existence of Field Trip Scotland and if I could get a copy of it. And she, to my amazement, wrote me right back and said, well, we never released that album, but we made the master for it. And if you'd like to hear it in our Neck of the Woods, please come on up. And she jokingly said, not everybody turns up on the doorstep. But I took her at her word and arranged a visit, and she pulled out the recordings, which she hadn't listened to them since they made them in the 1950s. And she explained that the Field Trip Scotland recording sort of got tabled when she had a baby, and she the Library of Congress sort of put the project on the back burner, and it never was completed. So that ended up being the topic of my dissertation. And it was during that work in Scotland that I met Hamish Henderson, one of her most important contacts during her work, and discovered that he had also worked with music for children. And, of course, that is my actual, you know, area of expertise. I teach music education and train teachers to teach classroom music. So when I found all that children's music, I thought, as soon as I'm done with this dissertation, I'm coming back to work on these children's songs and games. And that led to a subsequent publication called Hot Peas and Barley, O, Children's Songs and Games from Scotland, which included the field recordings from the 50s of kids in Scotland. Jean continued in a role as a mentor to me, and she also wrote the foreword for it. And in the foreword, she said, this has made me want to recall my own childhood memories, to which I said, really? I've got a pen. Let's write it down. Well, then, yeah.
It obviously led to Kentucky Mother Goose, written
That's
by
right.
Jean Ritchie and Susan Broomfield, who's on the phone right now. You said something interesting in the introduction, teaching children authentic children's songs. What do you mean by authentic?
There's a growing trend, thankfully, but for a while there's been a divide between, I guess, what you would call school music and real music. If you ask almost anyone, what are the songs you remember from learning in school, almost everybody will tell you that they played Hot Cross Buns on the recorder, and then it sort of stops there. A lot of music that was commercially produced for children tended to be not really music that's that palatable to children. And, you know, back in the day, there wasn't music that was created for children. Kids made their own music. Playground songs, clapping games, rhymes, jump rope songs, and chants were all made by children and for children. The idea of adults making up sort of fake music to teach at school for kids is something that is not part of this, not part of the Kodai approach. The idea is to expose children to music that is real music, music that will actually stick, music that you would remember as an older person, not a made-up song about how to brush your teeth or something like that. Those kinds of songs have their place, I suppose, but providing teachers with real music from whatever culture we happen to be exploring at the time, it should be music that's, you know, authentic is a very loaded word in academic circles, so I don't want to be too...
Well, we started with Golden Ring Around the Susan Girl. Is that an authentic children's song?
Well, Golden Ring Around the Susan Girl is actually a play party song, and it was a sort of a game song that would have been played at an actual social function. It's not a children's song per se. It's just a good song.
That's one of the songs that's in your new book, Kentucky Mother Goose. That was a part of Jean Ritchie's childhood.
That's right. In fact, everything in Kentucky Mother Goose is a song that Jean recalled having sung and played in her childhood. In music-making cultures, there are songs that are, you know, sort of made up in playground songs, things like that, that are child to child. But children were also exposed to lots of other times of singing. The social functions of young adults and families often included singing. So that was part of a child's repertoire. Worship songs, songs that they heard around other people working. There wasn't this divide of that's a children's song. It was just a song. And the idea was that Jean wrote down lists of everything she could remember having sung as a child. And so some of the songs in Kentucky Mother Goose, I guess you could classify as children's songs. Others are songs that she heard her parents sing while rocking a baby or while churning the butter, things that were sung at a play party event where people would gather. It's a very interesting thing, I suppose, if you wanted to go back and look at Kentucky Mother Goose from a scholarly perspective and sort of divide up how the songs behave. There's an overlap there about when and where songs were sung. What these have in common is that they are just songs that Jean recalled. And she talked a little bit about each one, and that's what we find in the book. Jean really wanted to set the songs in the framework of how they were sung in her family, who she learned the song from, and who that person learned it from.
What I like about the book is that it does give you a profile of what life was like growing up in the Ritchie family.
Jean would tell you that there are many, many singing members of her family, and I had an opportunity to meet many members of the Ritchie family this past summer when I was back in Kentucky for her funeral service, after which everyone came back to the house, and of course there was a lot of singing there. Nieces, nephews, cousins, her family members all sing. This is very definitely a singing family.
It's a big family, too. Jean grew up as the youngest of 14, is that right?
That's right.
And she made her way to New York City in the early 50s, before the folk revival. What was a Virginia girl doing in New York City?
Kentucky girl.
She's Kentucky girl.
Well, that's a great story, too. Jean actually trained as a social worker. Her sisters had attended settlement schools in the hills of Kentucky, but by the time Jean was in high school, there was a high school in Viper. So she didn't go away to school as her older siblings had done. She went to high school in Viper, but the idea of the settlement school was very appealing to her. And Jean actually held a Phi Beta Kappa key in social work from the University of Kentucky, and it was her goal to be a social worker. So she, in 1947, moved to New York City to work as a social worker at the Henry Street Settlement School in New York. And that is where she began her career as a social worker. But it was a fairly short-lived career because she met Alan Lomax, was introduced to him by someone who knew that Lomax was interested in collecting folk music. And this person knew that Jean was the real deal. And so they were introduced, and he quickly recorded her entire repertoire. In fact, some of the original and earliest recordings that Alan Lomax made of Jean are included in our Kentucky Mother Goose CD. Sort of an incredible find.
I'll tell you what, Susan, let me interrupt you and play a cut from the earliest recordings that Jean Ritchie did with Alan Lomax. Tell me about Jenny Taylor-O.
I learned the song Jimmy Taylor-O when Jean came to Texas. We played it with a band, and maybe you'll be able to play a little bit of that clip as well, of a live concert recording of her playing it. I had no idea that she had been singing it her whole life. She said that they didn't know if it was originally General Taylor-O, but it evolved in her family as Jimmy Taylor-O. And I had no idea until I came across the Lomax recordings that she had been singing it that long. So apparently it was just one that had been sung for a long time in her family.
So here's a recording of Jean Ritchie from 1949, recording with Alan Lomax.
Had a little trouble down in Mexico, nobody hurt but Jimmy Taylor, oh, hi, oh, diddle I day. Come to the place where the blood was shed, the girls go back and the boys go ahead, hi, oh, diddle I day. The boys and the girls, when they did meet, they stopped and they hugged and they kissed about a week, hi, oh, diddle I day.
Jean Ritchie with Jenny Taylor-O from a recording done with Alan Lomax from 1949. That recording is from a new book called Jean Ritchie's Kentucky Mother Goose. And on the phone with me is the co-author of the book, Susan Brumfield. And Susan, illustrating the music book is Maurice Sendak. And that seems like that was quite a find as well.
That comes in the category of minor miracle. Maurice Sendak liked Jean Ritchie, and he was living in Greenwich Village. I believe he was a neighbor. And in the early 1950s, Jean had written a book called Singing Family of the Cumberlands, and it was autobiographical. And at the time, her neighbor was a then undiscovered young illustrator named Maurice Sendak. And when Jean and I started working on Kentucky Mother Goose and talking about, well, should it be a children's book? What should it look like? Would you like it to be illustrated? I said, well, who illustrated Singing Family of the Cumberlands? And she didn't bat an eye. She said, well, that was Maurice Sendak. And I said, what? And she said, yeah, Maurice Sendak, you know, where the wild things are. And I had had Singing Family of the Cumberlands on my bookshelf for 25 years and never even made the connection because it's such early work. It doesn't look exactly like what we think of as the Maurice Sendak illustrations that are in his later books. And her husband, George, came in and said, yes, well, he was just sprawled out in the middle of our living room floor, and he did a few sketches for us. And we said, oh, why not? Let's give the kid a chance.
That's great.
And through another very complicated story, I was directed to the Rosenbach Museum in Philadelphia, where they were, along with a lot of other Sendak materials. So I went to the museum, and as we were going through the sketches, we noticed that there were four of the original Sendak drawings that were not used in the Singing Family of the Cumberlands, thus four unseen, unpublished drawings by Maurice Sendak. That's a pretty rare find.
And now they're part of your book?
Mm-hmm. It took about 3 years to get through that process and a lot of tenacious work on our part, but we were able to secure permission to use the drawings in the book. In fact, meant to be sort of a thing, there are four sections in our book, and there are four Sendak drawings. It's quite special.
The book is Gene Ritchie's Kentucky Mother Goose, and I'm on the phone with Susan Brumfield, who co-wrote the book with Gene Ritchie. Actually, it was mostly all of Gene Ritchie's songs and family photos and now Maurice Sendak's drawings. But I want to make clear that Gene Ritchie moved to New York City in the early 50s, and at that time, she was quite an anomaly. I think of Gene Ritchie, I think of her introducing the dulcimer to urban folk music.
Well, she did do that. In fact, she moved to the city in 1947. By the early 1950s, she was married to George Picot, who was himself a fantastic photographer. He was a Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer. And they were in a very interesting circle of friends at that time. Pete Seeger, Woody Guthrie, Oscar Brand. She was right in the middle of the folk music revival, yet she herself was very unpolitical. She was just there making music. In fact, it was Ellen Lomax who helped her get a Fulbright grant to go and study her family's songs in England, Scotland, and Ireland. But she was a dulcimer player. She had learned from her father, and she brought the dulcimer from the Kentucky mountains. And in fact, at one point, she and her husband designed the dulcimers and had another friend make them. Most people would say that she's the person who is responsible for popularizing the Appalachian lap dulcimer outside the mountains. Of course, if you go back to the hills of Kentucky, a lot of people played the dulcimer and some very fine ones too. But she learned from her father and she brought her dulcimer with her to New York. And that was the first that instrument was really seen too much around up north.
She is such an iconic character that I got in trouble when I suggested that she was characterized in the movie Inside Llewyn Davis, who kind of exploited the early 60s folk scene. Did she see that movie?
I'm guessing no. I believe that her son and I had a conversation about maybe the film, but I'm not sure that at that point Jean would have seen that movie. I can't really say.
Gene Ritchie, unfortunately, just passed away. Did she see the book?
Jean was able to see the very last draft of the pages. In fact, our editors at the Hal Leonard Corporation were fantastic because they moved this production schedule in an amazing way in that they knew that there was a window of time in which we really needed to try to get this done. So we finished the book about 6 days before she passed away. We were very happy that we were able to share that with her.
Gene Ritchie's Kentucky Mother Goose, Songs and Stories from My Childhood, of Gene Ritchie with Susan Brumfield, who's on the phone with me, with pictures by Maurice Sendak. And it also comes with a CD of the music, both old and new recordings from Gene Ritchie. Thank you so much for doing this, Susan. Let me end with one more song. Do you have a request?
How about the live concert version of Jimmy Taylor O?
Okay. And this was recorded by you? This is you in concert?
This was recorded. Mm-hmm. This is recorded with Gene at Texas Tech University, with a group called Last Night's Fun and a group of singers, all music students at Texas Tech, called the Sweet Peas. And you'll hear the whole audience singing along, led by Gene.
Susan, thank you so much for taking time and also for writing this book.